I thought we'd like made it then. Like, you know, I thought, this is it. Like, I will reiterate that I know it's still a small business, but for us to do well over 100 grand in revenue per month randomly was quite mind blowing. But we weren't prepared for what would happen very suddenly.
How are you? Welcome to the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. Today, my guest is Dan Nugent, the co-founder of EverAmber. He is building a brand new business in the performance and longevity space. Here's my chat with Dan Nugent. Over the past 5 years in this podcast, I've spoken to loads of amazing Irish businesses who grew from one idea to become world-class companies, able to compete with the best on the international stage. And many of those started up and grew with the help of their local enterprise office. From starting or growing to become more sustainable or digitization, the local enterprise offices have everything to help make it happen for your business. Visit localenterprise.ie or click the link in the bio below. Okay, you know me. You know I'm massively into my health, fitness and training. But there's one thing I haven't spoken about before, and that is a product I take every single day. It's a product called Resilience, and it's made by an Irish company called Ethos. What's kind of funny is that every single entrepreneur I meet, that is the one characteristic they have, incredible resilience. So I like that little play on words. It's a multifunctional supplement that supports cognitive function, immunity, which is super important this time of year, energy levels, and it keeps stress at bay. I also love it because it's easy. If you're bringing anything new habit into your life, it has to be easy, and taking resilience is so simple. I simply mix it in a glass of water every single morning, and I always throw a couple of extra in my gym bag to keep them with me. It's a really tasty blood orange flavor as well. It ticks all the boxes. It has B vitamins, amino acids, vitamin C, and adaptogens like reishi mushroom and ashwagandha. So, if you want to try it, I think you should. Go to weareethos.com, and because I like it so much, the guys have given me a discount code. So if you go to weareethos.com, enter Gary Fox at the checkout, you'll get 20% off, which makes taking resilience about €1 a day, which is an unbelievable price for building some inner resilience. Check out weareethos.com. If you've been listening for a while, you'll know Iconic Offices have been my partner and home in the pod for a long time now. Working and recording in their spaces has helped support the ambitious goals of the pod and, to be honest, really helped it grow. So I partner with them to give you, my fellow entrepreneurs, the opportunity to work from Iconic Offices spaces and experience it for yourself. No fees, no catches. Simply visit the Iconic Offices link in the show notes below and enter the code GARY24 and claim your free co-working day pass, or bring the whole team with you and book a day office. Dan, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Gary. It's good to be back. Older and wiser.
7th of August, 2019.
Yes, I was a naive, young, cocky buck who had yet to be worn down by the world of entrepreneurship.
I was not young, but I was definitely naive. That you were one, I think I started in March 2019. So you were one of my first guests.
Really?
Yeah. It was cool.
I remember it very well. We were, I think that was post Amber being stocked in Brown Thomas. And I think that was the kind of topic, the main topic. I think that was the title of the episode.
Yeah.
From bedroom to Brown Thomas.
I think it sounds like something I'd write, to be fair. Yeah.
Something like that.
Something clickbaity like that.
Yeah, good times.
So talk to me. What were you doing then?
Back then? I'm sure not all of your listeners know, but hopefully some of them do. I started an e-commerce brand called Amber Eyewear with my then girlfriend, now wife, Sasha. That was in May 2017. We had this idea, we had just had a baby, and you know, our social life had become non-existent. We were spending a lot of time in the evening, you know, watching TV and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, Jesus, like, we feel like we should be doing something more productive with our time. Coincidentally, then at the same time, I had started hearing about blue light as a concept from podcasts, etc. And I just bought a cheap pair of Amazon to help me with that excessive screen time that I was now having, because I have to stay indoors to when the baby's asleep and not be out with my friends. And it was just one of those eureka moments when me and Sasha were like, she's a designer, and I've always had an interest in e-com and just like selling in general. And we were like, oh, it'd be really cool if we just like started our own business with all this time that we have. And
I love it that you just had a baby and you're like, we've all this time now.
Genuinely, I know people say that it has the actual opposite effect, but you find that, like, you know, you're home an awful lot more. So you're like, your evenings are a lot, you've so much more time in the evenings.
You have pockets of time.
Because you're not out having pints or anything like that, you know, like, which is also great. But, you know, we didn't want to waste that time watching TV. Like, I love watching TV or whatever, but like every night it was a bit excessive. Like, let's do something productive here. She's a really talented designer. I had a bit of business acumen, I suppose. And I'm like, well, what will we sell? We'll set up a website. I've seen Shopify. Sounds cool. And then she just like looked at me and was like, what about those glasses? Because the ones you're wearing are horrendous, but they work really well. Like, they've made a big difference to like your headaches and your sleep and stuff.
You were early on the blue light. Because I remember you telling me this back 2019. And even then I was like, oh yeah, I've heard something about this. But you were very early, 2017. You were very early.
There was really only one brand in the US that was doing it at the time. So yeah, like very early. And then, you know, we cobbled together a few quid that we had. It wasn't much. We were mid-20s. And at that, you know, if you're not putting a gigantic amount of money into your initial manufacturing run, you want to buy small quantities, you don't have much like leverage for like customization and, you know, your own designs and stuff. So, you know, we had like white labeled product initial stock with blue light lenses, but there was just nobody else doing it in Ireland. We designed a brand and a logo and everything in a few days, worked on the website, friends down for photography, blah, 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 put it all together. And I think we put 2,000 quid into it. Launched the website, thinking if we made our money back, it would be great. Ended up being all over like Love in Dublin, Sunday Independent, loads of media attention straight away. Influencers. I remember I met Roz Purcell, gave her a pair. She posted about them. So within 2 weeks, we'd sold out of the initial run and had like a month of back orders.
Why do you think that was? Or was it just timing, good marketing? What was it?
I think it was just a novel product. And it just addressed a very simple and common problem that people were having, which is like, I'm increasingly spending more time on my phone or on my laptop and my eyes start to hurt. This is a solution here, and it looks cool, and it's cheap, and it's an Irish brand, and I'm definitely going to give it a try. Mm-hmm. So it caught on, and also it's a very word of mouth type product. Like, you're sitting in Facebook office, some person beside you just randomly starts wearing glasses one day. Like, why are you wearing those glasses? I told you your eyesight was fine.
Yeah.
Oh no, they're blue light.
Yeah.
So then you would see like one order in Google, and then it would like multiple orders from Google, multiple orders from Zendesk, multiple orders from Facebook. And it was crazy. Like, you know, we were just like very young, first business. And it was wild, like, just to see the attention that it got at the start. And like, we had no idea how big it would eventually get. Like, it was always still a relatively small business in the grand scheme of things. But for us, the way it grew over the preceding 5 years was just insane and just so much fun, like the whole thing. See, that was the initial story. And we just kind of snowballed from that initial batch of back orders, like that funded the next production run. We gradually got bigger, snowballed more frames, gradually got more kind of input into the design and the way we wanted stuff to look, professionalized everything until we got to a point in February 2021. I know we've skipped a long time there, but probably cover that period of time where we'd sold glasses in like 80 different countries.
Wow.
You know, almost done like, what, like nearly 3 million quid in revenue. Brent Thomas, stockists, like, really was just like totally random, incredible thing to happen.
Well, it's the perfect story that everybody loves. You literally built it from
the kitchen table.
Like, it, and it's the entrepreneurial story we all love, because we're like, that could be me. And you literally 100%. Did it. You and Sasha literally did it. And they're the kind of stories that I love on the podcast, because it's achievable. Now, there's a lot of talent and a lot of hard work and a lot of luck that goes into these things, but you literally built it from the bedroom up. So like, you bring, last 2019 is when we last spoke, and you just kind of Brent Thomas and things were flying. Then bring us up, you were saying, up to kind of 2020, things were going really well.
Yeah, things were going really well. We had our, you know, we had our own office, expanded the range, making it a full-time job, which was great, because I think the biggest benefit of that is that we got to be with Aurora, who's my daughter. You know, we got to spend so much time with her up until the age of like 5 or 6. ticking over nicely. You know, we were doing, able to pay our wage, blah, blah, blah. And then COVID hit, and we didn't really know what the impact of that would be, whether it was going to be negative or positive on Amber. It turned out it was an overwhelming positive. And because, you know, people were in quarantine, lockdown, and spending a lot of time indoors and screens, these type of glasses became like this huge trending product worldwide. And, you know, if you just look at like Google search trend from back then, just the term like blue light glasses, it just like spikes. So like universal demand across the world for this type of product, not in particular Amber eyewear, but luckily we had kind of formed a small little base as a reliable, well-liked product. So we obviously benefited massively from that in Ireland. And overnight, like the sales just went like 5x, which comes with its own challenges. You know, you've got to keep your stock.
I was going to ask you, how running. Did you manage that during COVID?
I mean, intuition a lot of the time. I didn't always get it right, but basically always, I am not a very, I suppose, like analytical and... I'm not great at planning, maybe. I'm more like spontaneous and what's the word? I'm kind of like spontaneous and impulsive, whatever. So a more mathematical mind than me might have like, you know, forecasted out stock better. But I would be like, can I curse?
Curse away.
I'd be like, fuck it. I'm just going to buy a shitload of inventory. I think that'll be enough. Yeah. Your gut, you're relying on your gut, your gut got you that far. I always have like kind of like a inventory levels in my mind of like particular frames just from looking at them because we self fulfilled through the whole time, so it was just like buy a big load of stock. Hopefully it would arrive on time. Hopefully there was no disruption, and I mean there was one time it did actually had a big problem. So you can ship glasses and you can ship them by air. It can arrive in Ireland within like, you know, shipping time could be like 5 days. Wow. and you get them if it's air shipped. But with cases and boxes and packaging and stuff, you know, you're getting them made. They are heftier and they would be too expensive to ship by air. So you have to ship them by sea. And because you have to ship them by sea, you have to be far more organized and forecasted out well, which I made a massive error once. And we had hundreds and hundreds of orders coming through like every day and no cases to put them in. So I found myself in a situation where I was driving around Dublin and beyond, actually going to every single deals in Dublin and just picking up like boxes of their really naff, like pink hard cases, like cheap hard cases, and bringing them back. And for like a period of like 2 months, maybe a month, we had to like send every single order out in these like non-branded, disgusting, like multicolored or leopard skin cases to people,
but just to get them done,
just to get it done. Yeah. But we always like included, like a little card with it, and it was like written by me and Sasha. It was like probably it was too long. It was like, I'm so sorry about this, but we didn't have a choice. Blah blah blah, offering them like a 30% discount on their next purchase, and actually in hindsight, that turned out to be a benefit, like a net benefit. Like people would write back going like, I loved that card. I will definitely support you again. Thank you for the discount code.
I think sometimes when you buy from a brand, you forget there's real people behind it. No, yeah. Sometimes there isn't. Sometimes they're big faceless brands. But I think it's so refreshing when you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
There's people actually putting this in a box, me caring enough to actually write a little note.
Yeah. So it actually turned into a good like customer loyalty, unintentional strategy. Yeah. People loved it.
Genius guerrilla marketing.
Yeah. Sending messages going like, I love that card. You know, I hope you get through random people. Like, I hope you get through the difficulties.
Amazing.
So that time was hectic. Like, and it coincided with the birth of Theo, who's our second child. He was born on Black Friday.
No way.
Yeah, in 2020.
Perfect for e-commerce retailers to have a child born Black Friday.
I was in the post-delivery ward on my laptop, writing back to multiple customer support emails, much to Sasha's dismay. But, I mean, that was just the time it was. It was just like it was such a hectic, unpredictable burst of sales that all these things just had to be dealt with. You just had to think on your feet. like it was a fun time. It was mad to be just like sitting at home and just your phone, Shopify, cha-ching, 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 like over and over again. So anyway, I thought we'd like made it then. Like, you know, I thought, this is it. Like, you know, we've got this product.
You said a 5X increase in sales.
Yeah. Wow. To the point where we were, I mean, again, I will reiterate that I know it's still a small business, but for us to do, you know, well over 100 grand in revenue per month, randomly, just like all of a sudden, was quite mind blowing. And you know, we did actually deal with it quite well, and didn't run into any major stock issues. We were able to get the stock out, but we weren't prepared for what would happen. Very suddenly in March 2021, when things kind of started to go back to normal again, and Amber Eyewear unfortunately fell foul to the e-com apocalypse that happened like pretty much worldwide around that time. You know, the stores opened again, that rising exponential spike in shopping from home didn't only plateau, but properly fell off a cliff.
Was it like night and day? Was it like someone flicking a switch?
I could feel it. Like, you know, you can almost like feel the atmosphere, especially when you're like so ingrained in Shopify, and you kind of, you see your sales come through on your phone or whatever. But there was something like obviously February was great, but then March just didn't have that same energy about it, you know? And you know, March, you know, sales are down like 60% from February.
Wow.
And you're like, oh, hopefully that's just an anomaly. April, another 50%, you know? And the problem that I had was that I had, you know, taken the optimist route, and the gambler in me, like the impulsive entrepreneur, always taking risks. It's a big problem I have, by the way, just literally no risk aversion. So all the cash that we'd been making with Amber, poured it back into inventory. And then when the sales dipped, you know, not only worldwide e-com, but also because it was quite a trending product, which I didn't anticipate as well as I should have, sales fall off a cliff. You're left with a shitload of inventory, but no working capital or cash to actually sell that inventory in terms of marketing or, you know, any sort of promotional activity or anything that you can get the hype back up again. Left me in a personally quite a rough space, I would say. Still does. But like, that was February 2021, March 2021. And by the time it got to the end of the year, we were almost like 90% down on like what the year-on-year monthly sales would have been. Yeah. I mean, luckily, you know, it was only me and Sasha, so we didn't have anybody to fire or anything like that.
Well, luckily or unluckily, you're both involved in it. Like, I mean,
both involved.
I think we forget now, looking back, we forget how unpredictable the world was then. We literally, oh, it's open, now it's closed. You can go out, you can't go out. You can go 5K, you can't go 5K.
Yeah.
So to predict, for entrepreneurs like you or any of us, to predict what was going to happen was next to night impossible. Mm. Like, it really was, because how could you not kind of go, okay, well, we need to keep going, because it might have gone on for way longer. You might have left out stock either. So it's really one of those, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, I think, in that situation.
Oh, yeah, and hindsight is a good thing. There's lots of things. I mean, I have experience now. I know what I would have done differently. I know what I should have done differently. But so at the end of 2021, I made the decision really that, you know, myself and Sasha are, this is our sole income. We've got two kids now. We don't own a house. I should probably, you know, kind of retract from this. I need to just, you know, take time back from this, because it's causing me far too much stress. And I'm gonna just find a proper job for a while anyway. And
that's a hard decision. How did you come to that?
I couldn't really take the stress of it, to be honest. Like, it was, I probably, nobody really knows apart from Sasha, but like, I'm very competitive and like very ambitious, and to see something that you were like fully sure was going to result in a really exceptional like life for you, your family, and to be kind of like decimated beyond your control overnight is kind of tough to take. And then, of course, you've got issues like nothing too serious, but like creditors and stuff that like you're like, look, I actually can't pay that now. You need to have a bit of patience with me. That's a situation never really been in before. An example of that, and it's quite topical at the moment, would be the tax warehousing
thing that's going on. The VAT warehousing thing. Yeah.
So if you imagine that period of time that I speak of when, you know, 5X sales or whatever, you're paying 23% VAT on those sales, right? But you're also growing. Well, you presume you're growing. So if I want to capture that demand, that demand that I'm seeing in the future, I need to spend my profits now on stock to capture that demand. And when that demand doesn't happen and you have the VAT bill left over, but now you've got all stock, no sales, you get yourself into a tricky situation. So that was kind of one example of like how such a sudden dip can kind of cause that. So I think my conclusion at the end of 2021 was like, I'm going to get a proper job. I'm going to remove myself from the wage bill just to kind of free up a little bit of liquidity and begin to just start kind of clearing that backlog of stuff that needs to be paid. And it's funny, like that's actually continued on for pretty much nearly 2 years. And Sasha left later. She joined Sculpted by Amy as a graphic designer. So we freed up like, you know, all the salary bill and we're able to kind of like tick Amber along over the last 2 years with repeat business, organic, that kind of stuff. Cause we didn't really have any cash to like put into any marketing initiatives to launch like exciting new products. So that's kind of what's happened over the last 2 years is that I've just kind of cut the costs down completely. And this is a common theme actually with a lot of e-commerce brands and just kind of let it leanly, very, very leanly tick over while I use that kind of cash just to kind of, you know, get it back on track almost.
Rebuild. You know? Yeah. And that's what I was so interested to chat to you because the world's in a funny place at the minute. Like there's a lot has changed and a lot of stuff is still going through the system. So it's really interesting you bring it up, like the VAT warehousing and things like that. There's still a lot that people haven't dealt with. There's still a lot that people are still dealing with from COVID. So it's interesting for you to be able to like give us a great example of how does it really affect people.
People would say you're stupid because you should have just paid it at the time. But the example that I gave is like, how could I, you know, I had to be optimistic. Like, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're a business owner. You obviously have to see like the ambition. And I never thought it would like, you know, be that much of a dip. So I always thought I'd be able to pay back. But I feel very sorry for a lot of businesses, particularly in the restaurant industry where, you know, margins are so tight anyway, and they've availed of all these COVID supports.
Just to stay alive.
I mean, it probably is quite naive to kick the can down the road and be like, I'll worry about that in 2 years. But like, what are you supposed to do at the time, you know? And then you have a situation now where they're reeling it in. And I think maybe with like something like Amber, who will get into like a rebranding called Ever Amber now is the business. It's okay because, you know, it's not as tricky in terms of like margins and stuff. You can, there's potential there to deal with like a VAT warehousing. But I think with restaurants and stuff, it's going to be mightily tough. Because they're being squeezed at all angles.
I walked through town last week, last week, I walked all across town for different meetings and different things I had on. And I was genuinely shocked by the amount of closures. I literally went to walk into one place that I used to always go for lunch, literally banged into the door and it was just a sign up and the thing going, thanks for the loyal custom, we've now closed. And you're like, damn it. Like, and then it was like, then, cause you see it once, you start seeing it everywhere. You're like, oh my God, that's gone, that's gone, that's gone, that's gone. And you start waking up going, the city's in a real funny spot at the minute. Really, really unusual spot between closures. And I think there is a lot of things now coming home to roost.
Yeah. And I think like, obviously with that, it's the double whammy, isn't it? It's like, there's not much people in town. You know, this is like, you have the work from home thing, which is great, like on a personal level, but town must be suffering pretty badly.
There has to be a big rebalance because like you said, that people are only working maybe Tuesday, Wednesday in town or Tuesday, Thursday in town. What do these places do on a Monday and a Friday?
100%.
They still have to pay the rates. They still have to have the lights on. They still have to have their staff. But like I've chatted to businesses, they're down 50-60% on a Monday, Friday.
God.
Ugh. It's not doable. Like.
Yeah. And that with like energy costs and stuff. I think when May 2024, which is when they're calling in the final agreement that needs to be made for the tax warehousing, when that rolls around, it's probably going to get a lot worse.
And there's billions owed.
Billions, yeah. I have a lot of sympathy for people. Obviously, I'm one of them and I'm biased, but you know, unpredictable times. I think it's going to kill a lot of small businesses. Luckily, I think we're okay. It wasn't, you know, too big. So,
also faced up to it, though. Right? That
just got to deal with it.
That's
time.
Also the thing. I think that's what a lot of people aren't doing. They're not facing up to it and kind of going, right, how do we start chipping away at this? And like, I mean, what you did, go back to take a job, like that's one of the toughest decisions as a business owner you can make. So you're like, right, I'm going to keep going, but now I'm going to double my workload. So you went and got a job. What'd you do?
So as I said to you before we started recording, there was only really two places that I wanted to work. And I'm a big proponent of, if I'm going to work somewhere, it has to be somewhere that's going to teach me something about what I want to do in the future, which is, I was obsessed with e-commerce. I just love selling stuff online and brands and products and stuff. So there was two places that I had in mind. Literally, I wouldn't have got a job if I didn't get a job in one of those two places. And that was Shopify or Wayflyer. Backstory with, obviously Shopify is Shopify, you know, but with Wayflyer, it was the period of time where they were getting a lot of media attention. I had a previous kind of link to Wayflyer, in that when Amber in late 2019, we had a pop-up shop just off Grafton Street on Wicklow Street for the Christmas period. You were there, had a big party.
Yeah, it's cool.
Big
lunch DJ, party. DJ, very fancy.
DJ, very cool. Great times, innocent times. and Jack Pierce came in to the shop one day and introduced himself and told me he had a new company that was funding e-commerce businesses. He was looking for Irish companies to test out the concept, offered me a few grand to, I had to pay it back now, but offered me a few grand for inventory and to, and at the time I was lucky because I actually, from opening the shop, you're kind of like double your inventory needs. So I was a bit tight and I was like, geez, this is very convenient. So that turned out to be Wayflyer's first customer. So I was Wayflyer's first customer and kept in touch with Jack. Watched from afar as that business went hyperbolic. So there was no, between that and Shopify, there was no other place that I wanted to work. So applied for a job on Wayflyer, more of it on the techie side of things, didn't get it, but then got contacted by Jack personally to join this kind of new team of e-commerce people that he was forming in Wayflyer post Series B that were going to try and like figure out and test new products for e-commerce people. So I obviously jumped at the chance of that. So that's where I went. And I was delighted, like, you know, they couldn't be in a better environment to learn about what I did wrong, study what the best in class are doing, and like sit and stew on that for 2 years and plot how you can come back for like round two now that you are battle hardened and more experienced.
It's a stroke of genius, I have to say. When I saw you go there, I was like, that's a really interesting move, because it's kind of what I thought you were doing was just kind of like soaking up all this knowledge. I mean, Wayflyer in the last 4 or 5 years, like they're the one biggest success stories to come out of Ireland. Aidan was on the pod a couple of years ago. Unbelievable story. And I mean, as an e-com guy, there couldn't have been a better place to go. So what was it like getting in there and getting involved? What was that journey like?
Well, you instantly realize that, I always actually think of, you know, like the Dunning-Kruger scale.
Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, at the start you're like, you're ignorant, but you don't know you're ignorant and you think you're an expert.
Yeah.
That's where I was, you know, 2017 to 2021 almost.
But you don't know what you don't know. I always say this. You think you're an expert.
You're like, yeah. I am the greatest person alive. I am, you know, running this six-figure a month e-commerce store. I know everything.
Well, to be fair, expert in a niche area that you know intimately. So like, we're all experts in some way, but then when you go abroad, you're like, oh, wow, didn't even know that room was in there.
Exactly. What I'm saying is I thought I was an expert, but turns out I wasn't. So you step foot in the door and you see people who are everything that I'm not, which is like, I, as I said before, like I'm like impulsive and not very risk averse. Is risk averse, does that mean That means I don't like risk.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, sorry, I'm not risk averse.
You're very highly risk tolerant.
Risk tolerant, that's the word. And obsessed with like product and branding and visual stuff and marketing and, you know, that type of thing. But when you go into Wayflyer, you're like, oh, this is all the stuff that I'm not good at. So this is like planning and financial prudence, how to manage growth of a fast e-commerce business. Like what are the common pitfalls? I pretty much fell for all of them. How do you deal with that from like a managing a cash flow perspective? Also like how does performance marketing impact your financial health, all that type of stuff. And that was like a real eye-opener to me to see how someone from a finance background views an e-commerce company. You know, when you're starting out as an e-commerce brand, or possibly most e-commerce founders pre-2021, you're looking at that Shopify total revenue figure as your North Star, as your like metric, going, oh, I made whatever today. Brilliant. But in a kind of a post-COVID world where margins are tighter, advertising costs are a little bit more, that's just a vanity figure. You know, what really matters is like what at the end of the day, like what is that actual profit you're making per unit?
Revenue is vanity, profit is sanity.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, you know, and I quickly realized there that like in the whole history of Amber, regardless of how much I had sold, how many units I'd sold and the success, ultimately I just actually wasn't really making any money. Like, you know, when like operating expenses and advertising costs are taken into account, the margin was just too small to function long term. So you see all this and you see some of the best like US brands that are customers of Wayflyer. Like Wayflyer's main customer base is the US. Like you couldn't ask to be learning off a better cohort of e-commerce companies.
They're very far ahead when it comes to e-commerce and D2C, I think.
Like light years ahead, light years ahead. And you're being exposed to this every day. And you see, like, you see, like, it actually is a transferable formula for e-commerce brands. You need a certain percentage of gross margin. And you should not exceed a certain percentage of revenue on wages. Like, like multiple other best in class financial benchmarking that I had never even considered for Amber. I just rolled with it. This is plucking a price point out of thin air, thinking that like, you know, oh yeah, that's enough. And people might laugh at that, but I actually would be amazed how many e-commerce founders are like that. They just have no concept of the underlying financial metrics that make up a successful
A lot of founders in general, to be honest, a lot of founders are very poor on the pricing thing, because generally what you see is they undervalue themselves.
100% to undercut competitors. So like over the last couple of years, whatever, there's been, since I've been working at Wayflyer, I see people trying to like maybe some people try to copy Amber, and then other just general companies that pop up on my Instagram feed with ads or whatever. And I just know in my head instantly that they will be out of business in 3 months, because you're like, you cannot possibly charge €30 for a pair of glasses. Once VAT is taken into account, once shipping costs are taken into account, you're done. Like, just, and true enough, every single time it rings true. So getting that masterclass in Wayflyer over the last 2 years and being exposed to like incredibly smart people in there, also young as well. Like, it is an insanely young company, considering the success it's had. Has just been like, as you said previously, like it's been like a masterclass or a PhD.
Hey, we're just taking a quick break from today's episode to shout out our main sponsor. If you've been inspired listening to this amazing business person and either want to start your own business or supercharge an existing one, then the Local Enterprise Office has something for you. Whether you want to improve your online presence, become more sustainable, get into new markets, or just get that idea off the ground, they have the support for you. For more information, check out Local Enterprise Week or log on to localenterprise.ie and see how they can help your business. Now, back to the episode.
You said something to me in our very first episode back in 2019. I was like, oh man, e-commerce, that's so cool. And you're like, yes, it is. But every single day I get up, I have to find a new customer.
Yeah.
And that has shaped how I look at businesses, how I look at business models ever since that day. I was like, he's dead right, because people aren't buying glasses every second week.
No.
I was like, so it shapes how I picture business models now from that one conversation we have. What has changed in your head since 2019, since 2020, since you went to work with Wayflower? What has shifted?
So to give an anecdote, right, May in 2020, myself and Sasha became, we were finalists in an Image Magazine Company of the Year, Brand of the Year or something like that. And the same as some of the other nominees at the time, and we were all in City Hall and it was a lovely occasion or whatever. And we did a really good pitch. A few people came up and said like, oh, you should have won. It was such a good pitch. Gin Plus Coffee actually won. Amy Connolly was there. She was also a nominee, somebody else. And you look at the trajectory of those companies. And
that's
then
a strong year.
It was good. Yeah, it was a good year. I think there's definitely a few other companies there. So apologies if I've left them in. They see this. But you see the trajectory of Gin Plus Coffee and you see the trajectory of Sculpted by Amy. Now, obviously, it's down to like exceptionally talented founders, great products, blah, blah, blah. But also, they are products that have an extremely high lifetime value, you know, especially cosmetics. You know, you buy Amy Connolly's product, you're not going to keep that makeup for 4 years like you do with an Amber Eyewear pair of glasses and not spend any money until they eventually break. You're going to like use the makeup, it's consumable, and then you're going to purchase it again in 3 months' time. Gin Plus Coffee with apparel, if there's a reason why it's the most popular e-com sector, most popular thing that people want to start, is because I can sell you loads of clothes. Do you know what I mean? You're only going to buy one pair of glasses mostly.
Yeah, you're not just going to buy one hoodie and wear it every single day.
So it sounds so obvious, but that was something that I didn't really totally understand or possibly accept with Amber. And I see customers now and they come back and they buy a pair and you kind of just see the customer history or whatever. And it's like they bought their first pair in 2019. So for those 4 years, that customer has just been like there, but I have nothing to sell them. I've had nothing to sell them. It's a wasted acquisition almost.
So you spend all the money building the relationship and getting them over the line and then nothing.
And then it's just like, and they might love the brand. They show their friends like, oh, I have this really cool pair of Irish glasses. But I've never had the cop on or the eureka moment to address that issue. So when I see like the most successful brands, and even when I talk about Gin Plus Coffee and Sculpted, they have the ability to initially acquire a customer with a quality product, but then they can continue to sell items to that actual customer. So while there's one stream of work for them that goes towards acquiring new customers, but they're really maximizing that pool of current customers that they have. And that is something that Amber never did. So what was happening to me is I was selling glasses at a growing rate. And I just hit a ceiling. Like during COVID, everybody wanted the glasses. I talked to random people, meet random people, and they're like, oh my God, I bought a pair of those glasses during the pandemic. And you just realize, Jesus, I actually just did hit like the ceiling. I was playing a volume game in Ireland, which doesn't work.
Yeah, you maxed out, yeah.
Basically maxed out. Now you could say, why didn't you go to the UK or the US? We have a lot of sales in the US and UK, but it's much harder to sell. Cost of acquiring customers way higher. That goes back to me not having enough margin to actually make that a viable business strategy. So where am I going with this? I think in e-commerce, you've probably got two options, and that is, you know, high margin, once-off purchase. And I say once-off by maybe like once every two years. And you do a volume game on that. Consumer electronics, something along those lines. You just like get loads of volume on it. Or separately, you find a product that you think is really good and you think that it satisfies the need of a certain person. You sell that product to these people and then you sit back and you go, what else would these people like? You know, rather than what I was doing is just like foisting glasses upon as many people as possible, knowing and not really realizing that they're not going to come back for 4 years. So this is why I kind of am pivoting the brand more so now. I'm rebranding it as a performance and recovery eyewear brand, dropping the word eyewear, which gives me a lot more flexibility in the future for when I acquire customers and I'm not kind of tied to the eyewear pigeonhole. You know?
So what are we moving into?
I'm moving into more onto the sports side. And there's a reason behind that. There's a few reasons behind it. But if we want to talk about a eureka moment, I recently, just like seven, eight months ago, I started getting orders from professional footballers. I was like, this is so random. Why is Patrick Bamford, who plays for Leeds, ordering glasses here? Then I got another order from the striker for the women's football team in Ireland, Amber Barrett. This is weird. Why are all the footballers buying pairs of glasses? And then I realized Erling Haaland had gone on the Logan Paul podcast and he had spoken a lot about the importance of blue light glasses for him as a recovery tool. I said, Jesus, that's interesting. Like, you know, and I love sport. Like, you know, I love like running and I've always been interested in sport. It's a big part of my life now, especially in my mid-30s. Mm. I can't be in the pub every weekend, you know, I have to be doing something healthy. And I just got the cogs moving in my head and I was like, Jesus, that's what I want to do. Like I want to have a sports brand. I want to have like some sort of sports and performance brand. And I already have a product there that is being used by lots of athletes. I just need to kind of position it a little bit differently. And then I think about what I just talked about with the knowing your customer audience and selling them more products. And I think about the typical Amber customer. They're people who, you know, they might work in a tech company. They work at a screen. That's why they bought the glasses in the first place. But outside of that, you know, they're usually people who are very interested in their health. Exercise is such a huge part of life now in Ireland. So it just became apparent that, and I look at people who tagged Amber on Instagram, they're out in the weekend cycling, you know? And that was the eureka moment. It's like, oh, I already have that cohort of people here. I'm just playing in this tiny, narrow part of their life.
Yeah.
Like, why don't I expand into other parts of their life, you know, and provide them with like really cool products that they love for other things that they do. So that's where the idea for Ever Amber came about. And so we're basically launching new eyewear ranges for performance, which is like running, cycling, anything outdoors, and recovery, which is the important part.
Yeah.
That's the blue light glasses, the Erling Haaland glasses for improving your sleep. And
sleep has become such a big thing. I like what you're doing here because you're not like trying to reinvent the wheel. You're not like, oh, I'll just start again. I'll just scrap it, which a lot of people do. They're like, oh, I'm just sick of it now. I'm just going to scrap and start again. And they spend all this time and money trying to start a new thing. Whereas you're going, wait, I have something that was working exceptionally well at one point. How can I just improve that slightly and already take, because you have a massive customer base. So now you're, and if you're watching on YouTube, you'll be able to see the glasses in front of Dan here. Like you're taking something very clever and just tweaking.
Just tweaking. Making it more flexible.
Yeah.
Like growing it out, giving it a little bit more flexibility.
But I think that's massive for entrepreneurs listening is not always to be chasing the shiny new thing, which I think we're often guilty of. You have to look at what you already have and go, how can I already serve them? Because there's that stat of it costs 10 times more to get a new customer. I'd probably imagine that's gone higher now in the world. It's probably higher to acquire a new customer. Whereas you've all these customers who are happy, they've already bought from you, they're already in the funnel, you already know them, you can already contact them. Like just so many reasons to just look at what you already have.
That's exactly it. I look at Amber and I look at the list, like the customer list that we have in Shopify, and always been great feedback, always been great reviews. And it would be a travesty. Like I thought about closing down Amber Eyewear and just take it off my mind. It causes me too much pain. But then I just look at at the reviews, random messages from people saying how much they love the glasses. When is another one going to be in stock? And you're just like, it would be an actual travesty if I just cut the cord on it when it may not have even scraped the potential. Do you know? And I feel like this kind of repositioning as performance and recovery eyewear makes a lot of sense. In terms of like, you know, that balanced lifestyle, you know, you work during the day, but you're, you take your exercise very seriously on the weekend. You take your running very seriously. We see that with like running clubs, cycling clubs.
Running is having an absolute boom at the minute.
It's huge
everywhere. Because people have kind of gone, people during COVID are like, right, what can I do? I can go for a run. It's about the only thing I can do is I can go for a run. People are like, oh, okay, kind of into this now. And now there's a huge social thing. I think that you've tapped onto something very important here, because I think because people, there's a number of trends happening, the kind of work from home thing. And then people are now going, well, I don't actually have like a social life during the week. They're now seeking out things like running clubs. They're seeking out things like competitions. They're seeking out like high rocks. There's a real movement towards that being your outlet.
100%.
Your social thing is you get out of the weekend, you go for a 200K cycle or a 10K run or whatever it is. And people will spend money on their hobbies. Like the people do have disposable income to spend on their hobbies if they're really into it.
Yeah, 100%. Like some of the best times that I've spent with my friends recently, I've been doing competitions like that together. Like I've done Quest adventure race series a few times, and just did the marathon, Belfast Marathon last year, one of my friends. And I feel like at the age I'm at now, like that's kind of where I get my pleasure now, you know? And to be able to now pivot into that market that I'm personally so interested in is going to hopefully be very fulfilling.
You have to enjoy what you do, right, as well.
You got to a point with Amber and you're like what even is this now? It's like, I'm just selling like glasses to people, you know, positioning them as like, oh, you work in tech, wear glasses, your eyes won't hurt anymore. And it comes a certain point where you actually just can't say that anymore. It just becomes so repetitive and boring to me. Like I was
bored. You've evolved massively as an entrepreneur. That's why I was so excited to get you back on, because your evolution is really interesting. And I think this is a really interesting exploration, because the pod's going 5 years now. And now people are coming back on and I'm loving to explore their evolution as a person and as an entrepreneur, because that's where the learnings are. The learnings are in those hard years
of graft
and strain. Yeah. And it isn't really talked about. And that's why I like doing these long form pods, because that's where the learnings are. And that's where people really need to understand, is that it's not just like everyone looks at the drop shipping and all this crap on Instagram. You're kind of going, that's not real entrepreneurship.
No,
that's not real life. That might work and you might get lucky once, but you're not going to get lucky forever. And it is going to come to an end. And it's the entrepreneurs like you who shift and evolve and learn and go, right, okay, serious learnings here. How can I get better?
Yeah.
Like that took real balls to go back and go into Wayflyer and go, right, I'm going to make myself an e-commerce expert here. When realistically, like the ego to do that, you know, it takes a dent. It does take a real self-awareness to go, I'm going to step back here for a minute.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I'll go back to that Dunning-Kruger concept. So I don't think I finished the point, but I was in that period previously, and I realize it now, that, you know, I thought I was an expert because I didn't know enough. And now when I joined Wayfair, you instantly see, oh my God, I know nothing. So I think they call it like the valley of ignorance or ignorance realization or something like that. And that's kind of where I obviously know more about e-commerce than the average person, but for that year of working with like some of the greatest people that understand e-com, I've been in that zone now where I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually a complete beginner here. And now I'm just feel like I'm just starting to get into the point where I'm like, okay, I'm pretty good here. I'm pretty confident. I can have conversations with founders of, you know, six figure D2C brands in the States and not be out of my depth, you know? And that to me has been, you know, a massive, massive kind of opportunity that Wayflyer has given me. It's been class. Like, it's been really good.
I always say this in the pod all the time, you have to see it to be it. That's why I love doing these, because Ireland is full of incredible entrepreneurs, but sometimes you just don't know. Like, it's what we said there. You don't know what you don't know. How can you know what best in class looks like? And then in Ireland, there's a tendency, you kind of like you outlined it there lovely. You kind of reach your ceiling. And you're like, oh, I thought there was more here. And then you're like, well, what is there? And you can, unless you're exposed to these massive global brands and you peer under the hood and you're like, oh, there's a whole other level of this game.
Whole other level. Like that's
you think you're at a 10 and you're like, you can turn this up to a 50.
The thing that we're lucky about in Ireland is that it's phenomenally easy, I think, to actually find customers in Ireland as a brand.
Do you think so?
I think if you've got a good product and a good brand, it's exceptionally easy because everybody is willing to give you a leg up. And that's like media, like yourself, like newspapers. I remember like back in the day, you know, Sunday Business Post, Love in Dublin, et cetera, they'd be falling all over themselves to give you a plug. May have gotten a little bit harder now. I'm not so sure. But it's very, very easy to, once you have something that's really good, you know, and you do it properly and you're not selling tat to people.
Yeah. Once you have a story, though,
once you've got
a
good story, a good product, people like it, resonates, people can kind of connect with you and they're like, oh, I see what they're doing there. It is actually exceptionally easy. But then the caveat to that then is that it's capped. Do you know, you are going to run out of runway unless you find other ways to start bringing in money from customers that you
have. I think that's why this episode is very important, because founders need to understand, you know, there's levels, right? There's levels. It's great to reach a level, but then, you know, what does the next level look like? So talk to me about EverAmber then. What's our plan?
So the plan, I've been like plotting, producing, manufacturing over the last 6 to 7 months to have a initial batch of initial range that like we're really, really happy with. Really colorful, comfortable, great quality nylon lenses, which means nothing to anybody, but best of the best lenses.
So they're here. If you're on YouTube, you can see them in front of Dan. So talk to me about what I have in front of us here.
I accidentally brought two pairs of white glasses. They're not all white, but just some like a little different shapes. Like we, on the left here, we have a pair that we're looking to position towards like running, a smaller lens, very light in the face. Don't even feel like you're wearing them. And then more of the kind of like traditional shield lenses here for cycling. There's a prescription insert that you can get if you need a prescription when you're cycling. I've got a number of other styles as well. So this is just what I could fit in my bag. Packaging, nice packaging that we worked on. And then you can see at the front there is a red lensed pair of glasses. Now these specific lenses, I've been trying to source these lenses for years. There's very few companies in the world that have these red lenses. These are actually blue and green light blockers, specifically for aiding sleep. These are the ones that Erling Haaland was wearing. He gets them from a company in the States. I probably won't name them in case people.
I was going to say, don't give them a shout out, God's sake.
But they've probably been one of the only brands I've seen sell them, and I couldn't source them. I couldn't figure out where they were getting them from. But from the connections I made in the eyewear industry over the last couple of years, I managed to finally find these lenses, and I've been wearing those at nighttime, and I'm honestly not bullshitting here. I fall asleep wearing them because I just feel like my phone and my laptop has like no impact to me. It's like reading off Kindle. So green light is something that affects sleep as well, which is not as well known.
What's green light?
It's literally like just further up in the light spectrum than blue, blue light. So blue light is like closest to UV light on the spectrum, then comes green, but there's that kind of range between blue and green is what can impact your melatonin production.
So if anyone's not watching YouTube, go subscribe because you should. But I'll kind of describe, they're like black frames, but then they have a red lens. Kind of like, it's red, isn't it?
It's totally red.
Yeah.
So they would be that recovery side of things. So, you know, wake up on a Saturday, go for a big run, it's sunny, a low sun, you need your sunglasses, wear light nylon lens, like perfect visuals. When you wear them, do your exercise, come home, cook dinner, sun starts to go down, lash on your red lensed blue light blocking glasses, and fall asleep a lot easier, deeper quality sleep. You can actually, I guarantee you, that will be reflected in a Whoop strap.
This is the day in the life of EverAmber.
Yeah. And then when you talk about how we move further beyond that, and again, to go back to an anecdote related to Wayflower, last year I went to Los Angeles to shoot case study videos for Wayflower with some of the best customers over on the West Coast, and I found this just like a proper light bulb moment. I chatted with, there's actually two brands, one called Sand Cloud, who sell towels. They're like sandproof towels, so you just shake them and all the sand falls off.
What a niche.
Yeah, good idea. Like their shop is on Venice Beach, so it couldn't be in a better place.
Fair enough.
And then Ghost Golf was another one, golf brand based in Anaheim. Both of those companies started out with a very niche product, which is the sandproof towels. Ghost Golf with a magnetic golf towel. So, you know, you take your shot, your towel is on the green. Instead of bending down, you literally just put your putter on it, pick it up with the putter. Which sounds ridiculous, but
it's as niche as it gets. Niche, but if you're a golfer, you understand it.
So he going to talk about Ghost Golf. He sold like he launched those towels, and instantly, like within a few months, sold tens of thousands of them. And then instead of, if you juxtaposition that against what I did, if that was me, if that was like old me, I would have brought out more colors of golf towels. No, what he did was, he was like, okay, I know all these people that bought my towels are golfers. Now is the time for me to launch golf bags, premium golf bags, like expensive golf bags, high margin on them, lots of money to be made there, selling like multiple different golf products now, because he had crowbarred his way into the golfing community with a niche product. Same with the sand cloud, the towel guys. They actually started selling sun cream after they developed a sun cream, do you know? And that's that light bulb moment for me. It's like, okay, it would be extremely difficult for me to start a running apparel brand now, because so competitive, so competitive. However, if I can crowbar my way into these communities with a niche product that not many people are doing, which is sports sunglasses and, like, as I say, recovery glasses, I'm kind of inventing that concept. And then I acquire this, like, acquire this audience of people who are runners, who are cyclists, who are interested in their health. And then I can sell them a lot of stuff. Like then we can provide, I don't want to say sell in a kind of a
no, but that's the Del formula way, for success. That's you know, it's a business podcast. So you can talk about, you know, profit laws, all that kind of stuff, and sales. Like that's the formula. We're here to like share your story, but also here to share the learnings. Like that is the formula for success. You can't just be a one and done kind of product.
It is the formula. So this, like this new brand, the new angle gives us a lot of flexibility in what products we can sell. And I'm so excited for that. Like I can't wait till like winter 2024. And you know, we release like a limited edition Snood or Windbreaker or something specifically for runners, like this type of stuff. Like,
and you can stay in the conversation with your customers. Exactly.
You've got something to offer them then. You know, you're not just banging the old drum, buy a new pair of glasses, please, discount. Well,
but also like, and I say this all the time, is that, you know, no one really cares about you, right? You know, you care intimately about your product, but as an entrepreneur, you have to be able to stay in the conversation. You have to stay relevant because people's lives move on, different things happen. You move into different stages. You have to stay relevant. You have to stay in the conversation whereby you occupy that retail space in your customer's head and you have that emotional relationship.
Emotional relationship is key.
You have to be able to stay there. Like, whereas if you're just there once, you know, maybe they might buy, they might not. But a lot can happen in 4 years' time. You know, are they going to come back to Amber? Don't know. But now the fact that you're becoming part of their everyday lifestyle, it's huge. And like you're doing something smart, which I think is you're tapping into the performance and recovery market. Like I wear my Whoop every day. I've worn this since 2019.
I have an Aura.
I would not do without it. And people are like, oh, it's expensive. I'm like, it's 20 quid a month to know what's going on in my body. How on earth is that expensive?
Yeah, it's a great product.
It's wild. Like, I'm so bullish on the performance space, the longevity space, the health span space. We're only going to become smarter and more savvy about what's going on in our bodies. It's like the Jeff Bezos thing with Amazon. He's like, are customers going to want products quicker? Yes. Are they going to want them cheaper? Yes. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah.
You know, you got to look at what's in front of you and go, are people going to want to live healthier lives? Yes. Do you want to sleep better? Yes.
Yeah.
You have to look at these trends and go, instead of paddling out against the tide all the time, kind of go, right, where are the waves coming from? What are the next big waves? Definitely running is a massive trend. It's only going to continue. Health and performance, massive trend, only getting bigger. So like, I love what you're doing in the space.
I think there's another angle to it as well, is that, and it's so important, is like the content side of it. Like, that opens up a whole new avenue when you're in the sports and performance and recovery side of things. Like the content that you can produce has just infinitely more potential.
Yeah.
It's so much more entertaining.
And it's interesting. It's people interesting. Care.
It's cool. Like we did our first photo shoot there like a few weeks ago, and I recruited lots of very fit people from my gym. And it was just great. Like, you know, you just got so much more flexibility there with the content you create and how exciting it can be. Whereas
I saw the little teaser clip on LinkedIn yesterday,
A girl running on the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So excited to get all that. And I think that's where I'm not very good at that kind of content side of things. You're obviously very good, but like founder led brands where their founder has a very strong personal brand. It's just such a bonus. Like that is like, I don't think I'm going to be able to do that personally. I don't think I'd be that type of person.
But there's so many people now.
There's so many people I can maybe leverage as ambassadors.
Have you seen Ollie Marchant in the UK?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I was going to say George Heaton.
Yes.
Represent. Yeah.
But like, but that's just again, trends. No,
I'm not George Heaton, but
they're absolute units. The two lads, like they're so fit, like it's incredible. But like, there's so many people in that space. You know, you don't have to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
But it just shows you what's possible. It shows you like the content they're creating is beautiful, and people want to consume it. You'll sit down, you'll watch 20 minutes of these guys' vlogs. I sat down and watched an Ollie Marchant blog. All he's doing is organizing a community run.
Yeah.
And I sat down for 20 minutes and watched this vlog about it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. So I've reached out to like a number of like people within Dublin who are involved in running cycling clubs, who are not necessarily have loads of followers, but just produce really good content.
Yeah.
And you know, my plan for this month now is to start kind of like seeding out products to those, and you know, just to kind of just see, get feedback, obviously, but also with the intention of like having them featuring in their content. And, you know, using it ourselves.
And it's the nice thing. People actually want to
support local kind of.
They do, but also people want to consume that kind of content.
Yeah.
They want to kind of watch and go, how does that guy, I said it to you, you should check him out as well, Nick Bear. You're kind of going, how does he run? What does he eat? What does he wear? You know, people are curious about that kind of stuff. People are into that content to go, okay, I'm going to, you know, okay, I'm only running a 5K, but I still want to, you know, figure out how to do it in the best way possible.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about EverAmber just before we finish up and go to a quick fire round?
So it hasn't launched yet. So I don't know when this podcast airs. I'm not sure when you intend
to air. Couple of weeks'
time. So I am hoping to launch on probably the first week of April. And the website will be everamber.com, EVEOR AMBOR. In the meantime, I'm actually not sure. Just hang tight, hopefully. Oh, yeah. Follow us on Instagram.
I was going to say, there's an Insta. Insta. Perfect. Right. Let's move on to our quickfire round.
God.
What book should every entrepreneur read?
What did I say last time? I think I said like David Goggins' book back then.
I have no idea.
Oh, man.
That's 250 episodes, I'd say, ago.
You've really caught me there. I am actually going to be so bold here, and like, I actually haven't read that many books recently.
Interesting.
I used to be a big reader, but like, I don't know. I need to get back into it, but I've become more of a Twitter scroller.
What's the biggest thing you've learned about yourself over the last couple of years since pivoting the business?
I am hugely tolerant of risk and discomfort, which is it's a good thing in a way, but maybe a bad thing because I can sometimes take some bad risks. But I really think that's a core component of an entrepreneur, is not freaking out when things go to shit.
What would you do today if I give you 10 million euro?
I would probably, I tell you what I do. I have a friend in Canada called Henry, who actually started a roller skating brand, and he was on Dragon's Den over in Canada. It's very entrepreneurial, get on very well, been friends since we were kids. I've always wanted to start a business with him. Fly him back, we'd sit in a room for 5 days and come up with an unbelievable brand, and no expenses spared, launch something class.
Love that. Random roller skating brand. Good for him. What's something in your daily routine you wish you started sooner?
Cycling to work. Life hack.
Like it. I'm going to give you 1 million euro, but you can only invest in one company or person. Who is it?
Oh, he's going to love this, but I met a contractor, came to Wayflower, called Will O'Brien. I don't know if you've heard of Will.
His name pops up a lot.
Yeah, I met him for lunch the other day, and he's just like such an interesting character and just very intelligent, full of energy. Has a really cool startup that he's working on. Had a viral tweet there recently. I don't know if you saw
the Kerrygold.
The Kerrygold one. I would definitely invest in Will. I would say Luke Mackey as well, but I'd say everyone says Luke Mackey.
He was on this week, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke's cool. Yeah. But yeah, Will's coming on my radar a lot now. I'm going to have to investigate.
He was on David McWilliams a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm going to have to investigate him a little bit more. If you start a new company in the morning, you kind of are. But if you start a separate new company in the morning, what would it be?
I have looked at the creche situation in Ireland. And if I was inclined to, you know, I love products and brands, blah, blah, blah. If I was on the techie, if I was more on the SaaS techie side, coming up with some sort of company like that, I would be looking to try and solve some issues with the creche industry, cost, how we can make it more efficient and reduce the cost.
Mm. We have our daughter in creche now. It's a wild ride. Getting them in and then keeping them in is something else.
I agree.
What do you believe other people find strange or strongly disagree with?
What do I find strange that someone would disagree with?
Come on, we want something controversial. Give it to us.
I would. I don't want to be too controversial. Say the question again. Sorry.
What do you believe other people would find strange or strongly disagree with?
I sometimes believe that the Irish government is actively out to work against the best interests of its citizens. Like genuinely, not even in an accidental way or an incompetence way, like genuinely fully trying to make life worse for people.
I think a lot of people probably agree with that. Yeah. So it's not that contrarian. Yeah. What's one thing in your life that you spend money on that brings you immense happiness?
New products, like just seeing cool e-commerce brands. Like I have like an Aura ring on. I bought like Hoka shoes. I love seeing cool brands doing cool stuff and having them arrive in the house. I think that's a pretty crap answer, but
no, that's fair enough. Try new products. What's your final piece of advice for every entrepreneur listening?
It's very cliche, but like never view difficult periods and failure as a negative and the end of things. Like the more times that you can fail and accept it, it is just an unbelievable bonus going forward. Like you kind of feel bulletproof, I suppose.
I agree with you. It's only failure if you stop.
Never stop. Exactly. Damn. And I think success is probably, unless you're very lucky, success probably comes from how many times you've failed before.
100%. So. It's why I call the pod the Entrepreneur Experiment, because you just got to keep trying, keep testing. Mm. Dan, you're a symbol of that. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you. Very enjoyable.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, please hit subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts, as it really does help the podcast grow and reach new people. If you want to learn more about the podcast, go to mrgaryfox.com. I'll see you back here in a couple of days for a brand new episode.